Hello, and thank you for joining us again. This is Paul Saunders with the Center for the National Interest. Thank you for listening to the Three Questions podcast. Today, we're having a special episode and welcoming back quite quickly, actually, a recent guest, Samuel Bendett, who's an advisor at CNA, the Center for Naval Analyses, and also an adjunct senior fellow at Center for New American Security. And Sam, as some may remember, is really one of our leading experts in the United States on drones and autonomous warfare and related systems. And we just talked very recently, actually, about the role that the drones have been playing in Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Ukraine's defense of its territory. And since that conversation, we've had really this extremely remarkable drone attack by Ukraine on a number of air bases across Russia. So we have reached out to Sam, who has very graciously come back to do a special episode on this topic. So, Sam, first question for you on all of this is just, what occurred for those who may not have followed closely, and how did Ukraine launch these attacks? How did they do it?
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be back. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. We're about 6 days out from that attack now, and a lot of information has come to light. So, for those of you who are following this in great detail, I think it's great for those of you who have not. Here's what happened. Over the past approximately year and a half, Ukraine has been planning an attack on Russian strategic airfields that house Russian strategic aviation, long range bomber aircraft that can carry long-range missiles and nuclear weapons, the equivalent of American B-52, B-1, and B-2 aircraft. Ultimately, this was a long time planning, but the final attack took place at the most opportune time. Apparently, the Russian aircraft were about to take off on a bombing run against Ukraine or were very close to doing so. They were fully fueled, a lot of these aircraft, and some of them were even armed with missiles. So what Ukraine has done is they've conducted meticulous preparation, again, over the span of nearly a year and a half, where their operatives filtered into Russia and started importing, acquiring, and assembling short-range FPV-type drones for attacks against these bases. And what they've done is they've taken a shipping container, a regular commercial shipping container that is trucked across Russia by the millions. It's very similar to the shipping containers that we have here in the United States and elsewhere around the world. So, something that wouldn't necessarily arouse suspicion. And they began converting those commercial shipping containers into carriers of these FPV type drones. And for those who don't know, FPV type drone is a first person view drone. It's a short range quadcopter, usually flying anywhere between 5 to 15 kilometers in range. So Ukrainians converted commercial shipping containers into carriers of those UAVs. When the time came for an attack, they trucked those containers on a regular commercial truck and placed them near the targeted bases, just a few kilometers out, just a few miles out. And again, because this was a typical commercial container, it didn't arouse any suspicion from law enforcement, from internal security services, or even from bystanders. Again, this looked just like any other truck shipping containers across Russia. And so some of those trucks were parked near those bases. When the time for an attack came on June 1st, the top of those trucks slid off, and the FPV drones that were housed near the top of the container essentially took off for their targets, for their bases. And there's lots of videos online now about how this was done, how the trucks, excuse me, how the containers were refitted to carry those UAVs. But again, this was meticulously planned. Ukrainian security services and intel investigated their targets. They tracked their targets. They made sure, again, that this was something that would not arouse suspicion. The intended attack was supposed to take place on four bases, and some of those containers didn't function as intended as is probably the case with many intelligence operations, that everything went according to plan. But those that did actually take off were able to fly to those bases, and those FPV drones may have flown on a pre-programmed path for part of that flight, and then Ukrainian pilots took over and guided those FPV drones into the Russian bomber. And so today, there are, again, there are competing numbers as to how many were actually destroyed. We're still finding out through open sources, through satellite imagery, through Russian and Ukrainian language reporting, how many were actually targeted and damaged or destroyed. Initially, Ukraine said that 41 Russian bombers were damaged or destroyed. Now we're finding out the number is somewhat less than that. It's probably around 24 or so. But Ukrainians were able to target, damage, and burn Russian Tupolev 95 long-range bomber, several Tupolev 22 long-range bombers, as well as at least one A-50 AWACS-type aerial intelligence and reconnaissance aircraft. Again, not all of those containers functioned as intended, and therefore not all bases were hit. Not all intended targets and aircraft were actually damaged. But of those that were, still represent a significant portion of Russia's overall strategic aviation, part of Russia's nuclear triad that includes strategic aviation, long-range and intercontinental ballistic missiles, as well as nuclear submarines. Russians likely did not anticipate this attack. Their bases were probably defended against some of the larger incoming targets, and maybe even against some close-range threats like potential strikes by quadcopters and FPVs. But it appears that those Ukrainian drones that actually penetrated the bases did so with ease. And so Russians were caught flat-footed. This is a very embarrassing result. Even the loss of a single aircraft is quite devastating, since those long-range bombers cost at least $100 million each. Many were built in Soviet days and are no longer manufactured. So it isn't feasible for Russia to actually replace those aircraft that were damaged. So this is what took place on June 1st. A lot of eyewitness videos actually point to people noticing drones actually taken to the air from some of these containers. Some Russians actually tried to interdict and stop those containers from operating, and they may have been successful. There's also video of people trying to damage the container, kind of walking inside it and getting blown up, because all of those containers were rigged to explode once the mission was complete. The drone operation was likely done via Russian mobile communication networks, and because of that, the pilots could have been in near vicinity, or they could have been even far away. So this was a very well-planned operation, and it targeted something very, very specific, something that is of great importance to Russian military overall. But here is, I guess, the next question that we ask is, what is the impact on the actual war in Ukraine now that Ukrainians were able to damage a portion
that's of exactly my aviation. Second question. Sorry, that's right. Exactly my second question is kind of how significant is this for the war? But also related to that, you know, you brought up the question of Russia's nuclear triad. How significant is it in that context also?
So as far as Russia's nuclear triad goes, it is a loss. It is probably not a significant loss. After all, a lot of these aircraft were mostly used to launch long-range missiles against Ukrainian targets. And of those aircraft that do remain, there are enough of them to continue to do so. So if Ukrainian plan to target as many Russian strategic bombers as possible were successful, they probably could have significantly dented the Russian ability to target Ukraine. Because fewer aircraft were actually damaged or lost and taken out of commission, Russia still has enough to continue targeting Ukraine. However, it is a highly embarrassing event. I think on the first or second day of that strike, a Russian general in charge of these forces mysteriously fell out of the window, as many generals and personalities in Russia do. Heads are probably going to roll in the Russian MOD, but because of such an embarrassing attack that was witnessed by many people, that was filmed by regular people, that was posted on lots of social media platforms accessible to Russians, Ukrainians, and others around the world, Russian media, Russian government chose to kind of stay quiet and really downplay the importance of this attack. And so most Russian media reports on June 1st or 2nd barely mentioned this particular strike, while it was played out globally on social media for anyone willing to witness. As far as Russia's nuclear triad goes, it is a setback. And obviously, these aircraft are not easily replaceable. It is unlikely that Russia is even building their replacements, the more advanced long-range strategic aircraft, in enough numbers right now to compensate for what was lost. But again, the question is whether or not Russia is actually using this component of its nuclear triad actively. And the answer is it's not. It's using these aircraft to launch long-range conventional type missiles against Ukraine. So the question, what will Russia do next, is the one that's on everybody's mind. Obviously, we all love to know the internal conversations within the Ministry of Defense and in the airspace forces that we're managing the strategic aircraft that were lost. There are a lot of questions that are probably still unanswered as to why the bases were not adequately defended. There's lots of questions about Russian intelligence operations and counterintelligence. If Ukrainians were able to operate for a year and a half right under the noses of Russian intel services, what does that say about them? And additional evidence emerged that one of the bases for Ukrainian planning was the city of Chelyabinsk. That's just north of the border of Kazakhstan, and it's located in southern Siberia. Apparently, some of the components for these attacks were smuggled from Kazakhstan and assembled finally in Chelyabinsk and placed inside these containers that then launched the attacks. This is a highly inventive attack against Russian targets. Again, this was a long time planning, but it utilized a lot of open shelf, open source commercial technologies, off-the-shelf commercial technologies, something that's readily available and isn't really necessarily proprietary or limited to the military ecosystem. So Ukrainians use commercial tech. They use commercial communication networks and mobile networks. They used probably Russia's own trade routes to import some of these components for drones and assemble them inside Russia. And a lot of now experts in the West and Western military, especially U.S. military, is quite concerned about this result. Because if this attack took place against Russian military bases, which are supposed to be very well protected, then a similar copycat attack could potentially take place against some of the Western assets. Again, against some of the Western aircraft that were stationed and are stationed in overseas bases or even at American bases. It isn't a simple feature to pull this off. Again, Ukraine took a long time to plan this attack. But we have witnessed and we have evidence of violations of airspace over American bases by commercial quadcopters. And there have been incidents like that in the past. And so the question remains whether anyone would be willing to sort of copy what Ukraine has done in order to go after Western assets and American assets. And of course, United States military bases feature multi-layered protection. There's even an office in the Pentagon that's responsible for countering small-scale UAV threats. The question is whether this type of protection and this type of readiness is available at all American bases and whether these bases can actually protect themselves against multiple small-scale aerial targets like the FPV drones.
Certainly seems like a big wake-up call, I think, for a lot of militaries around the world. Third and final question, you know, you brought up partway through your previous answer how the Ukrainian operation kind of appeared to evade, you know, Russian intelligence and really to be a complete surprise to Russia. Some voices in Russia have argued that it couldn't possibly have been conducted without the knowledge of American or Western intelligence services, or possibly even without their active support and participation. What's your view on that? Do you think the evidence suggests that this is something that Ukraine was capable of doing entirely on its own and did entirely on its own? Or do you think there are reasons to think that they may have had some help or perhaps somebody knew about that and just allowed it to proceed without intervening?
Well, this is a typical Russian byline whenever a Ukrainian attack has taken place. They've been saying that for years, that a lot of these attacks are not Ukrainian made, are not Ukrainian native, are not done by Ukrainians alone, but are conducted with the help of United States, NATO, and the West. At this point, Ukrainians are claiming that this is an entirely domestic operation, that they planned it out and that they executed it, and that there's no evidence of American assistance or American help. Certainly, the reaction of the US administration is that of surprise, indicating they were probably not in the loop on the planning and execution of this operation. Again, what's important to mention here is that Ukraine utilized a lot of commercial tech, a lot of open source tech, lots of available technologies to execute this. This took planning, and this took meticulous observation of targets. And we know that 3.5 years of this conflict proves that Ukraine can do really incredible things. And it has enough domestic capacity, it has enough intellectual capacity, it has enough intel and organization to actually pull this off on its own. And so right now, all signs point that this was indeed a Ukrainian domestic operation executed over a long period of time on the Russian territory.
Thank you very much, Sam Bendett, for joining us here for this special episode of the Three Questions podcast. Really appreciate your coming back again so soon. And I think a terrific overview of what occurred. So thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you, Paul.